what seems so much more significant now about the year 2012 as a result of this transmission from Quetzalcoatl?
Right. Well, what seems significant about that year, I mean, this transmission is one piece of the puzzle, but for me it was really understanding all of these kind of outsider scholars who've been working with this Mayan and Toltec material and have discovered that this end date in 2012 represents this kind of very rare galactic alignment where the Earth and the Sun line up with the black hole or dark rift or cosmic mother that's at the center of the Milky Way. So that's how John Major Jenkins kind of put it together in his book Maya Cosmogenesis. There's also this work of Carl Johan Kalaman, which is really extraordinary also, where he looks at how there's this kind of acceleration taking place and this nine-stage process in the evolution of consciousness, which is represented by the nine levels of the Mayan pyramids, and that each stage is moving 20 times the amount of change, novelty, evolution of consciousness is happening in a 20 times faster amount of time. So now we're experiencing enough, as much change in about a year as people were experiencing before the 1990s in 20 years, and before the 1750s in 400 years.
Right.
And of course, there's no way to kind of like, graph that mathematically, but I think intuitively, if you sit with it, it's clear that there's this incredible speeding up process in the sense that the sort of systems that we've created are sort of moving towards a kind of crescendo, you know. So all of these are pieces of the puzzle in terms of understanding 2012. But for me, it has nothing to do with 2012. And I think to get fixated on that date is a problem. And that actually we have to really be more attuned to the processes that are taking place now and how to kind of assimilate them and react to them and begin to create a kind of counter movement and consciousness to help the process forward.
Well, let's start with that, but I'll say I've kind of looked at the way this time has been accelerating as a kind of sort of shopping cart with the world in it heading down a hill toward an intersection, and it gets faster and faster and faster and faster, and we're going towards something, and I don't know what that is. So well, tell me what you mean when you think about the things we need to do right now to either avoid a kind of cataclysm, but also to honor an apocalypse, to honor a time of in which hidden things are revealed.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's really the apocalypse, and this is once again this Jungian perspective, is the momentous event of the coming of the self into conscious realization. And one aspect of that, for me, is this deeper realization that's taking place about psychic phenomena and psychic reality and synchronicity. And that's work that one has to do on oneself, because we come from this materialist, skeptical perspective, if we're part of this, Western modern culture. And it's really a step-by-step process where you sort of recognize there's other levels going on and that there's these kind of synchronicities taking place. So one way I look at what's happening is it seems that reality is becoming, in kind of incremental stages, a little bit more kind of psychically malleable or psychically responsive, and also a little bit less materially dense.
Tell me about that. What do you mean by that?
Well, exactly what I said. It's just that somehow the psychic energy, psychic phenomena is becoming more available to us. One way I think about it is if you think about electricity. Like before 1750, people had seen lightning and experienced static shocks.
Right.
But nobody had a clue that you could bring electricity down into the human world and make cities and industrial grids out of it. And when that happened, look how fast we transformed the whole surface of the Earth. I would say a very similar thing is now happening with psychic phenomena, that a critical mass of people are becoming aware of the reality of the psychic realm and the psychic energy that's available to us, and it may be that we are able, within this time frame that's ahead of us, this very, very precious and critical time frame, to begin to actually utilize psychic energy for planetary healing and transformation.
When you talk about psychic energy, that can take a lot of different forms depending on, to whom you're speaking. So what do you mean by harnessing psychic energy? Just mass consciousness?
Right. Well, I mean, I think, like, for instance, the end of my book, I talk about the Hopi Indians and their rain dances, for instance. I mean, there's this Cambridge anthropologist who was working with the Hopi, and he wrote in his book, he was like, look, I hate to admit this, I'm a materialist, But I would go to these rain dances, and sometimes it would be a clear blue sky, 120 degrees. They would dance for half an hour, clouds would gather, and rain would fall. Okay. So, and he also talked about this kind of telepathic capacity that they'd maintained in their tribal ways. So it may be that, you know, and that's very interesting to me when you think about this critical kind of climate shift that's taking place and these rapid changes in climate. Well, what if the human psyche, a kind of ritualized consciousness, can actually exert a transformative effect on climate conditions, on physical conditions? And what if we actually need to go back to these indigenous cultures and relearn their kind of way of being in a kind of interrelationship with the natural world?
That's something which these indigenous cultures have that's of great value. How would we be able to incorporate that into our culture, though, which seems so focused on the modern and the scientific? How would we be able to make that jump to include something which, you know, we would use a word like primitive to try to describe?
Well, I think that those are the kind of words we may have to interrogate really, really deeply. And there may be a knowledge system that's been preserved by indigenous cultures, which is not primitive at all, which is super sensitive and sophisticated. And according to the Hopi, they talk about how at the end of the cycle, the elder white brother is going to come back and really be unpatronizing, uncondescending, finally, and really try to share knowledge with them and learn from them, too, because there may be things that these indigenous cultures have preserved as knowledge systems. They're going to be absolutely necessary for our near-term survival as a species.